The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. You're listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. We've got the Book Nook coming up for you, and today a very special guest joins us in studio. She grew up here in Yellow Springs, and she has just published her memoir. Her name is Shulie K. Wood, and her book is called The Going and Goodbye. And Shulie is in town for her high school reunion, and she'll also have an event later today in Yellow Springs, a book signing and a talk with another author. And that's all coming up. We'll tell you all about it following NPR News. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the studio today Shulie Sochitl K. Wood. Hello, Shulie.
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be on this program.
Well, you've got this new book that's just come out, and it's called The Going and Goodbye, and it's a memoir. And there seem to be a lot of memoirs these days. What was it that made you decide that you needed to write yours?
Well, I've always been interested in how a seemingly small decision can lead you to lead a very different life than if you had chosen differently. In my book, I talk about how I always loved beginnings, and I still do. I think I glamorize that time because it's a time before you've made a decision one way or the other about small things and big things. And I talk in my book about how there is a cost to everything, because in choosing one thing, you unchoose another. So the question that began this book was, how did I get to where I am today and who I am today? And this book is ultimately about leaving home and finding home. And when I say home, I don't just mean my hometown in Ohio and my family of origin, although that's in the book, but also leaving behind a sense of security and expectations I had of myself and of love and marriage, and finding out who I was without those things and in spite of those things. And that's, it became a book, but I don't think my intention was, you know, I'm going to write a book. It came about that way.
Did it help you figure out how you got to where you are today?
It absolutely did. One of the things I looked at was my first marriage. I looked at past relationships. I looked into fears about my own mortality, and that includes the death of a friend I lost a few years ago. And I absolutely, in exploring those things, learned a lot about who I am, and I think it helped me grapple with some of those things.
You grew up here in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and in your memoir, it's very clear that even though you don't live here anymore, that you feel a very strong connection to this community. Tell us about your upbringing in Yellow Springs and what's special about this place.
I feel really lucky to have grown up here. First of all, I had a wonderful family. I had loving parents, supportive parents. And I grew up, I felt, in a community that sheltered me from a lot of harder things that I would find out later in life. I didn't have to deal as much, I felt, like with things like racism. I felt like I lived in a community that was really accepting of creativity and diversity. And I think about, you know, what kids did growing up, you know, crazy plays and musicals. We had a wonderful music teacher who put on these incredible musicals and music shows. And I think about how I was able to I got music in my life. I learned the viola from a director named Shirley Mullins, who with such a small school managed to create a wonderful orchestra. I was not a good musician, so despite me, the viola section did well. But I was allowed to play even though I wasn't very good, and that was a huge opportunity. So I feel like I was raised in a town of creativity, and that helped nurture that for the rest of my life.
Some of our listeners might know your parents. They've been in this community for a long time, and you talk about them a bit in your memoir. Who are they?
My parents are Albert and Sonia Kaywood, although my dad is known as Hap Kaywood. He is or was the editor of the editorial page news of the Dayton Daily News. So I grew up around writing. I remember when we were little, he took pieces of paper and cut them up and stapled them together into little books. And my sister and I would write our, you know, quote, books, our little stories in them. And so he never asked us to be writers, but we were always allowed to be writers. And both of us have always been writing our whole lives. My mother is from Mexico. She taught Spanish at University of Dayton and Wright State University. I was a very, very stubborn child, so I did not grow up learning Spanish because I refused. I actually learned through the school system, my poor mother, but I did. I learned through the school system. I remember in seventh grade, we went to Mexico as a family, and it was between my seventh and eighth grade years, and I remember feeling like I couldn't speak anything, and my sister could. She was able to talk to boys, and I wanted to talk to boys too, so I ended up enrolling in Spanish in eighth grade so I could do that when we traveled to Mexico.
Your memoir opens in Mexico, and you take a path through this memoir where you go back and forth in time. How did you decide on the structure for this? And tell our listeners how it's set up.
So it starts out with a story from my life, which was with the person who had become my first husband. And we took a trip. It was the trip where we really fell in love in Mexico. It was actually supposed to be my 10-year high school reunion, and that did happen without me, and I planned it. But I decided to not go to it because I wanted to see him in Mexico. He was doing some research. So I abandoned my reunion and flew down to Mexico, and we traveled around Acapulco and Taxco and Puerto Escondido and Mexico City. And it's really where we fell in love. And so this first scene was a scene I remember very clearly where we went to an amusement park and took a ride that ended up making us both nauseous. And, you know, looking back now at, I mean, that was a long time ago, nearly 20 years ago, I realized it kind of showed how later our love would fall apart as well. So that's the first scene.
I'm speaking with Shuley Kaywood about her memoir, The Going and Goodbye. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. The memoir just came out, and you've been writing for a long time. I understand that you write a lot of poetry.
I really grew up writing poetry from high school on, and I always thought I would become a poet. When I went to college and graduated, well, right before I graduated, I looked into a Master's of Fine Arts program in poetry and thought I would go on and be a poet. And I remember my professors, they kindly talked me out of it. Not that they didn't think my writing was good, but they said, go live some life before you go to graduate school. Don't go straight into graduate school. Go live. And at the time, too, there was a shortage of teaching positions. So they knew also I was heading into that era if I went to graduate school. At any rate, I took that advice, but couldn't find a job either. And in the summer after I graduated, I ended up applying to journalism school and going to journalism school straight from my undergraduate. But I had continued to write poetry throughout that graduate degree in journalism, and actually still do to this day. I love poetry. It's probably my easiest genre to write in because I'm so used to it.
How is your memoir like poetry?
I think I've been told that I write in a way that sounds somewhat like poetry in the sense that I use a lot of imagery, a lot of senses in my writing. I don't think that I think about it when I write, but I've been told that it often sounds poetic for that reason. But it's not something that I'm aware of when I write.
There's a lot of emotion in this memoir and a lot of history of your relationships and your feelings about various things that might have been causing you distress. And yet you strike me as a very private person. What was it like to get this kind of stuff down on the page and share it with strangers?
So I was able to get a window into how that is long before the book came out because I've published different chapters in different publications. Some of them were much easier to write about. For example, one of the chapters is about my friend Sophie, who was very dear to me and really shaped a lot of who I became in later years. And she ended up dying. And so that was very easy to write and very easy to put out there because of my adoration for her. There were other chapters that were more difficult to publish. There is a chapter on a health issue that I've had that ends up in the book, and it was published in The Rumpus. And I remember being scared when that got published and, you know, saying, yes, I want to do it, but also being frightened. And I'm not sure what I was frightened about exactly, except that I am so personal and private. It felt like, you know, kind of throwing your journal out there in some ways. But it was still important to me because I felt like I had something to share that someone might relate to, and that was more important than my fear.
It's really a pleasure to be joined in studio by Shuli Kaywood. And Shuli is in town for her high school reunion, visiting friends and family from her home in Tennessee. And she has an event coming up this afternoon, today, Saturday, July 1st. And that is at the Little Art Theater here in Yellow Springs, downtown Yellow Springs on Xenia Avenue. And that begins at 1 o'clock. And Shuli will be joined by Denise Jacobs. And their event is called From Honorable Mentions to Authors, A Conversation About Life Choices. Shuli and Denise Jacobs grew up in Yellow Springs. In this event, they will be talking about their childhood and how it influenced their lives and careers and the journey each of them has taken to become authors, both Kaywood and Jacobs, with new books coming out just in the last month. Jacobs' latest book is called Banish Your Inner Critic. It's a self-help handbook for unblocking creativity. The impetus for the book came 8 years ago when Jacobs battled self-doubt almost every day while working on her first book, The CSS Detective Guide. From that point on, her work has been focused on the creative process, specifically how to remove the biggest block to creativity, the inner critic. Jacobs' book combines neuroscience, psychology, mindfulness principles, and self-compassion research, all interwoven with personal storytelling, and You Can Do It cheerleading to present approachable and immediately applicable practices for putting the inner critic in its place. You can meet them today. They will be giving a presentation, a talk. They'll be signing books right here in Yellow Springs. That's at 1 o'clock at the Little Art Theater on Xenia Avenue downtown. You can meet Shuli Kaywood and Denise Jacobs. I'll continue my conversation with Shuli right after this. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McInnes, joined in studio today by Shuli Kaywood. We're talking about her memoir, The Going and Goodbye. You're currently married to your second husband. One gets the sense reading your memoir that you find your husbands by dancing. Is that correct?
That is correct. Uh-huh. We met, we both contra dance, and we met at a 12-hour dance that was happening Memorial Day 9 years ago. And I came up from, it was happening in the mountains of North Carolina, and I was living in Chapel Hill, and he was in Johnson City, Tennessee. And my group of friends came up for the day and danced, and he was taking admission at the door, and that's how we met. And then I can't say I really noticed him then very much, but then once we danced, that's when I noticed him. He is a very solid dancer, but he also doesn't do any crazy moves, and I'm not a crazy moves type of person. And he was very strong and capable on the dance floor, and that I noticed he was steady, and I liked that a lot.
Okay, that's the current husband.
Yes.
The first husband, also dancing was a big part of that, wasn't it?
It was. We did not meet dancing, but that was when we actually went out on a first date. I met him at a student program on campus when I was working at Miami University. He was a graduate student at the time. I was working at admissions, and I met him through a program. Someone introduced us. He asked me out on a date. We actually went on our first date. He asked me out for coffee. We met. And I remember it was really hard to speak to each other. Our conversation was really hard. And I thought, this isn't going anywhere. And then during that conversation that we had having coffee, I had told him I go salsa dancing in Cincinnati, which is an hour from Oxford, Ohio. And I said, you know, you're welcome to come with me. And he didn't forget about it. I wasn't sure if he'd remember, but he said he wanted to go. And so then we met up again, you know, in a car drive down there, and he brought a friend with him. And I was thinking, we're just friends. This isn't going anywhere. And then there was a connection on the dance floor, and that was it. From then on, we were dating.
So there's definitely dancing in your romantic history.
This is true.
Shirley Caywood joins us. Her memoir is The Going and Goodbye. What's the process for you? Anyone that reads this memoir is going to say, this is really distilled. What's the process of writing for you in this kind of context?
Well, some of the chapters came very easily and really didn't go through a lot of drafts. And then I can think of one chapter. It's called The Compromise. I probably went through 12 drafts. And when you look at the initial one, it looks extremely different than what it ended up being. So I think each story had a different process. Some were more difficult to write than others. And I don't mean necessarily emotionally difficult, but harder for me sometimes to articulate what I wanted to by writing about a story. And that also meant that I was trying to figure out something in each revision. So each chapter really had a very different process, one from the other.
I would love to give our listeners a sense of how you write, because you have a very special way of writing. Do you have something that you could read from the memoir to give them a little flavor of how you do it?
Sure. I will read from a chapter called The Dance. And I will pick up where I started contradancing. And this is after my first marriage has ended. In fact, contradance was a big part of my healing. So this is the section on contradancing. The first time I went contradancing, I wore the exact wrong outfit, jeans and a long-sleeved shirt. Everyone else wore baggy shorts, loose t-shirts, flowing skirts, items meant to keep you cool, to make you feel free. Within a few songs, the back of my shirt clung to my skin, and my forehead and temples were damp and then dripping. But I didn't stop. It was the first time I laughed so hard at how poorly I could execute something that seemed promising enough. Once I really started contradancing, I got the full-blown can't-get-enough-of-it bug. I found every dance within an 80-mile radius and showed up, usually with a carload of good friends I'd met through dance, a bottle of water, and a bag of trail mix to share on the ride home. We danced in theaters, old schoolhouses, big gymnasiums, and little churches. I plunged into contra because it's the most forgiving dance. It requires no creativity or innate grace. You follow the collar and can walk the entire song without any fancy footwork. I reveled in its freedoms, change partners every song, lock eyes to stave off dizziness. I could feel a man's arms around me without intimacy. I could feel momentary connection without the heavy emotion of a real relationship. You could tell a lot about a man by the way he contradanced. If he pulled you nose to nose into a swing and stared unblinking into your eyes, he was intense and flirty off the dance floor, too. if he cranked you in twirls, his hand clutching yours so hard you couldn't help but be propelled in circles, he was overbearing and cocky most, if not all, of the time. If he gave you no weight on your back when he held you so that if you leaned away you'd fall, he was afraid in relationships, at best, timid. These roles broke now and again, but mostly didn't, at least not at the Carberry Century Center where I danced. No one told me this.
Julie Kaywood reading from her memoir, The Going and Goodbye. And we have some contra dancers out there right now who are analyzing what you just said about their dance styles, and they're going, or, yeah, he's like that, right?
That's absolutely true.
I've never done it. What is contra dancing?
I describe contra dancing as a mix of square dancing and folk dancing, but a little more revved up. Sometimes people think of those movies like Pride and Prejudice where they have formation dances in a line. So think of that, but in a faster speed. It's a lot of fun. There's a caller who helps you walk the entire dance, which I like. It brings people who don't have necessarily a natural gift for dance, so you don't have to have grace. And, you know, I think salsa and swing require you to have some rhythm to dance. Contra dance, you don't. If you can count, you can dance this dance. You can walk it. And so I love it because it's a really welcoming group of people. They embrace beginners. And it's just lovely. And it was a huge, huge part of the healing that I had in my life. I credit that dance more than a lot of other things.
A lot of your memoir is about your relationships over the years. And your first husband is in here a lot.
He is.
And your current husband is in here a little bit, not as much. But one wonders, as you're reading it, what that was like. Were you trying to shield these men in some way? Were there things that you changed because you just thought it was too personal?
The only thing that I changed were their names. I changed the former boyfriend and the ex-husband. Those are the only two names that I did change for their privacy. My husband's name is Preston, so it is that in the book. I certainly left out a lot of things about each of those relationships that I didn't think were necessary for the story. And I think in writing it, I learned not just about myself and, you know, how I was in those experiences, but also how they might have felt and the things that I did that might have really hurt them that I don't know that I gave as much thought to before. I've always been aware of ways that I've failed in relationships, but I think this allowed me a greater glimpse into how I failed them even more deeply than I realized. And that was important for me to see. So I tried to show them in the ways that were necessary and mattered to the book, but I certainly didn't want to share all their secrets, just as I wouldn't want them to share mine. But I didn't change any facts at all. It is how I remember things.
Does it sometimes take second marriage to get it right?
I absolutely think that I am a better spouse to my second husband than I was to my first. That is absolutely true. I hope that it doesn't require that for all those people who are in their first marriages. But for those who are divorced, I will say there's hope because I think I definitely think I'm a better spouse for having gone through what I did. Absolutely.
Your current husband, Preston, has kind of an unusual occupation, which I think makes him fairly unusual as far as the things he has to deal with, I think really shape who he is based on what I read in your memoir.
I think that's true. He is he owns a funeral home in our town that we live in, Johnson City, Tennessee. And he is really one of the best men I've ever met in my life. He is a deeply caring person, and he's very calm about life in a way that I am not, that I strive to be, but I am not. And he really accepts life as it is. He doesn't wish for another reality, wish for things to be different. And I think that makes him a good funeral director because he can work with families with where they are and help them accept what is and move forward in that. And he is very focused in his business on helping people through grief. He believes very strongly that if you can have a good funeral, that'll help people move through the grief process easier.
I see you're wearing a beautiful pendant. Is that the one that you write about in the book?
It is the one I write about in the book. I wear it almost every day. It is a pendant that I have a chapter about that I actually bought in Yellow Springs at Ohio Silver, a shop I very much love. And it always reminds me of my writing, which is a huge part of who I am. And so I love to wear it.
And why does it remind you of your writing? Describe it.
It's a Celtic pendant, and I bought it one of the times that I was in Yellow Springs going to the Antioch Writers Workshop. And I bought it because I wanted something that would remind me of that week. And Antioch Writers Workshop is always wonderful, but sometimes the years that you attend those are more magical than others. Sometimes they're just out of this world, magical, insane. And that was one of those years. And so when I wear it, I'm reminded of that time.
Do you remember a particular writer that year that really knocked you out?
Absolutely. Matthew Goodman. He is a fantastic writer, fantastic teacher. I remember those teachers that year being in sync with each other, and I think that's what made it magical. It was as if they had talked ahead of time about how they should teach, and they were all coordinated in what they were saying, yet they had never spoken about that with each other. And Matthew really taught me a lot about memoir and reflective voice, and that memoir isn't just about recalling past events, but it's about the how have I changed from this event? How do I see the world differently and how to incorporate that into my writing? He really, really taught me that. Now, he is married to a Yellow Springer, Cassie Schwerner.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And I grew up with Cassie and her younger sister, Greta. So he has a Yellow Springs connection.
Right. Steve Schwerner.
Yep.
Hosted a radio show here on WYSO for many years. The man is a jazz authority. Yes, sir. Longtime Antioch College professor. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. My guest is Shuli Sochitl Kaywood. Her memoir is The Going and Goodbye. My favorite chapter is the one about your dog. Tell us about your doggie.
So, our dog, Kibby, is an Italian water dog, and which means she looks like Fozzie Bear, basically. And we got her in our second year of marriage. We had two older Jack Russells at the time who I absolutely adored. They were Preston's dogs, but I thought of them as mine once we got married. And we got the puppy because they were both old Jack Russells. But one was older than the other, and he was getting ready to leave this earth. So we decided that the other Jack Russell needed a companion. She did not agree, unfortunately. But nevertheless, we got the puppy. And I, being a writer, was at home all day with these dogs, all three of them. And I did not know how to raise a puppy at all. And I remember Preston came home with the dog, and it was a weekend, and he said, it was a Saturday, and he said, I'm going to work. And I said, you are? And I was terrified of being left alone with this puppy. I had no idea what to do. But we survived. I'm not saying we survived really well together. She was very loved by Preston, and I was very protective of her, but I did not like her one bit for a long time, probably a longer time than I should admit. I cared about her and I took care of her, but it took me a long time to love her. Now we are thick as thieves, but back then it was really hard. I just didn't know what to do with her, and I felt that she was a little bit aloof to me, so I think that was part of it.
Shuli, I've seen your emails, and on the bottom of your emails, you say your name and then you say writer. If someone asked your occupation, is that what you would tell them?
That is what I tell them, mm-hmm. Yes. And then it's always followed by them by what do you write? And do I know something that you have in the bookstore? So now I can say yes. but I'm a writer of poetry. I would say I'm a writer of poetry, of essays and memoir and fiction.
They don't follow it by asking what you really do and what your day job is?
Sometimes they do, yes. Most of the time they think it's really fascinating that I'm a writer.
Uh-huh.
So I think it sounds more glamorous than it probably is, although I enjoy it a lot. It's not particularly glamorous, I would say.
Okay. Well, I understand that you don't have an agent, which a lot of people say is necessary to get a book deal. Explain how you went about getting a book deal and who your publisher is and how that all took place.
I probably queried maybe two agents or three at most. My book is a little bit non-traditional in how it is formatted, or not formatted, but rather in its, how it's, can't think of the word, I'm so sorry.
Structured?
How it's structured, thank you. It is stories from my life, and I really wrote it so that there's certainly a narrative arc to it, but each chapter stands on its own as a story, its own story. And so I wasn't really confident that one of the big publishers would be interested in it. So I looked for small presses. I thought that would be a better fit for my book. And I researched presses, and I probably researched about 200, narrowed it down to maybe 10 or 12 that I thought might publish my kind of book. And I happened to find Platypus Press. It's a two-person publisher in England, and they have been nothing but a delight to work with every step of the way. I'm so thrilled that I'm publishing my book with them. They have been very generous with their time, with editing the book with me, very gentle edits, always looking for my opinion. They allowed me to choose the book cover design. They've just been very hands-on, which is what I wanted.
And it was a, what, six-year process?
It took me about 6 years to write this book. It was also my thesis for my MFA. I have a graduate degree from Queen's University. I graduated there from in Charlotte, North Carolina, about a year and a half ago. And so it was also my thesis. I overhauled it twice since that thesis. But yes, I did work on it then, and it did take me many years to have it come together.
I've been joined in studio by Shuli Kaywood. We're talking about her memoir. And you can meet Shuli this afternoon. She has an event at the Little Art Theater beginning at 1 o'clock. Shuli will be talking about her new book, and she'll be joined by Denise Jacobs in a conversation about life choices. And Denise's book is Banish Your Inner Critic. The event is open to the public. There's no admission charge. There will be books available, and a book signing will follow the program. And the program begins at 1 o'clock. Plenty of room in the Little Art Theater for you to come out and listen to Shuli and Denise talking about life choices. We'll continue with our final segment with Shuli Kaywood in the Book Nook, right after this. The Book Nook continues on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for tuning in this morning. My guest in studio is Shuli Kaywood. Her book is The Going and Goodbye. It's her memoir. What kind of stuff do you like to read?
I do love memoir. So that is one of my favorite types of books to read. I also love a good novel. Probably one of my favorites is Ann Patchett's State of Wonder, but I have lots of novels that I like. I love getting into a good story.
Ann Patchett, isn't she in Tennessee?
She is. Yeah. She's in Nashville.
She has a bookstore.
She has a bookstore I have been to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neat. All right, so your book has just come out. There's been all this time and all this work and all this effort involved in getting this book into the final form that it's in, and it's got to be very exciting, and I'm wondering how you're feeling. What are you anticipating? Who are you expecting to be your readers?
I am expecting people who are interested in introspection to be attracted to my book. I think it's a book for both women and men. I don't think of it as one or the other. I'm sure all my friends will be reading it, but I hope along with that, that people who love memoir will want to read it, and people who like storytelling. Like I said, I wrote each chapter to be its own standalone story if someone wants to read it that way. And so I hope that those are the people who would be interested.
I understand that you've been published quite a bit in literary reviews. Tell us about that and how that whole thing takes place. How do you get in a literary review?
It takes a lot of research, I think, because the first step is to not only research the magazines that are out there and that may be interested in the type of writing you do in terms of genre, but also you have to, you know, I write poetry, but there are many magazines out there where I read the poetry they publish, and it is not anything like my poetry. I know that I don't have a shot there, basically, and that's okay. There are certainly magazines that I read. I tend to submit to places that I like reading because I feel like that's probably closest to my writing. And so I've been really lucky to find some great literary magazines, both in print and online. One of my favorites is Full Grown People. She publishes an online magazine that is fabulous. It publishes a personal essay. I'm pretty sure it's once a week. It could be twice a week. It gets delivered to your inbox. And I almost every time love every essay that I read from that magazine and online publication. So it takes a lot of research and a lot of fortitude. I've gotten used to rejection. I certainly have been rejected many, many more times than I've been accepted, and that's okay. I'm used to it. You have to have thick skin to be able to do it, and I'm good with that.
When you say that you look at a particular publication and you decide that based on the poetry you're seeing in it, that your poetry might not be a good fit, is it because that poetry that you're reading is so good, because it's so bad, so different?
I would say that it's so different from mine, that it's just – it's almost like a world apart. And so I feel like if that's the kind of poems or stories that they're attracted to, they're not going to be necessarily attracted to mine. It doesn't mean that I don't try. I have Reach magazines that I will submit to because there's no point in not. I send things to the New Yorker.
You have?
Oh, sure. So.
And you got rejected?
I've been rejected quite a few times from the New Yorker. Mm-hmm. Most of the time you just don't hear anything.
Oh, really?
But every once in a while you'll get a nice, you know, rejection letter that looks like everybody else's, and you think this is a step up, and that's a good thing.
I read the poetry in the New Yorker, and sometimes I like it, but most of the time it reminds me of a lot of the art that's coming out these days where I just kind of scratch my head and I say, I don't get it.
I would agree with you.
I mean, I feel like an old fuddy-duddy even saying that, but I look at artwork where, not to name anybody in particular, but let's say they have a shark inside a plexiglass cube or something like that. And I just go, well, yeah, you know, it was probably really expensive to do that, but I don't really see the art. I mean, yeah, the shark was a beautiful animal when it was swimming in the ocean.
I agree with you. I read a lot of poetry like that. I actually read a lot of stories like that where I have no idea what I was supposed to get out of it. I don't even quite – I understand the words, but I don't really understand what happened. Uh-huh. And those are not the publications I tend to submit to.
Are those short stories you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about short stories and poetry. I like writing that is accessible. I like poems that are accessible. I like poems that anybody can read and you understand them. Mm-hmm. I like them to have layers – as well, but I like them to be accessible. And so that's what I write, both in my short stories and poetry. Everything's accessible, I think.
The book is The Going and Goodbye. It's a memoir by Shuley Kaywood. And we've wandered into the realm of poetry. And we're wondering now out here in Radio Land if you are working on anything else besides poetry? Are you working on another book, perhaps?
I am working on I have a collection of short stories that I'm really almost done with at this point. And then I have a novella, and I'm trying to figure out whether to put that with the collection of short stories or whether to try to do something with it separately. I am trying to get those individual short stories published before I try to find probably a small press to submit them to. I've been told by numerous people that agents don't take on short story collections unless you're famous, and I am not.
So short stories have been ghettoized in a way, just like some other forms. I think of poetry as being something that's very popular among a very small group of people. I don't think that many people read poetry. I know there's a lot of poetry being written, but I think of people who are really great poets and they only really got famous after they wrote prose.
I think that's true. I do think that a lot of people think of poetry as obscure. And so they think, well, I just want to understand it. I've had people who don't even read a lot of – actually who don't read a lot of it say, I just don't get poetry. And so that's – I think that's too bad that the only poetry they've been exposed to are things that are – you have to look up a bunch of words to understand it or you have to know Greek mythology to understand it. And that's okay to have references. But I remember I had a poem come out that was – it was about cooking, but it was really about dating. It was a very simple poem, and I got it published, was very happy about it. I posted it on my blog, which I keep, and – I remember people who don't usually read poetry thinking, I'm not saying my poem was fantastic, but they said, oh, I actually like this because it was accessible. And I think that's sometimes all it takes.
Did they get it that it wasn't about cooking and it was actually about dating? Did they get that or did they think it was about cooking?
I hope they got it. I think it was pretty obvious.
Give me an idea of what you mean. Did you have just some clever double entendres going on here?
No, it started out talking about how I used to sort of – in cooking, I used to kind of just toss things together. And then in dating, I did that too. I sort of didn't follow the rules with dating, and that now I've gone back to sort of following more of a – following the list of ingredients, making sure you have the right thing, and that I'm more careful in dating. So it's quite explicit in the poem.
I see. Okay. And is that on your blog?
It is.
How do people read your blog? What's the address?
It's at my name, shulycawood.com, shulycawood.com. And there's a blog there. That particular poem is under publications, although it did come up in my blog. I posted on my blog. But I put a story from my life in the blog about every 2 weeks. Uh-huh. And a few of the chapters came from that. Most of them didn't. They were personal essays, you know, from stories in my life. But a couple of them came from my blog.
And your short stories, what are those like? What are those about? Are they really dark?
No. Okay. I consistently write about relationships, which if you read my book probably wouldn't surprise you because I write about a lot of relationships in my memoir. So I write a lot about mostly couples going through some sort of crisis together. Most of the time it does not end very well, but sometimes it does. But I like to explore how people do the dance of relationships and deal with a crisis that they didn't expect. That's always interesting to me, how two people navigate what one wants versus what the other one wants.
Are the mothers always really terrible in your stories?
They are really terrible, okay. And I had a lovely mother. But usually they are bad.
Okay. And why is that?
I have no idea. I don't think ahead of time about what a character is going to be like or what their family is going to be like. They just sort of appear on the page for me. It's wonderful and odd.
Do you know how the story is going to end before you start writing it?
Never. Absolutely never. It might be nice to do that, but I think the joy of writing is discovering along with the characters what's going to happen to them. I think the novella is the one piece of writing I finally understood. I'd heard other writers talk about how characters take on a life of their own and they surprise you, and I hadn't really felt that way until I wrote that novella where these characters had secrets I never anticipated, and they would just come out in the page. They had pasts I could have never guessed. And so they were telling, I felt like they were telling their own story, that I was just writing and they were the ones talking. And that is really fun. I think if I planned, it would take all that away from that experience. And I loved writing that novella for that reason.
Do you get any of your ideas from dreams?
I don't. I have written two short stories based on my life, but other than that, they're not about my life at all. But there were two short stories that I was not able to put in my memoir as stories of my life because I couldn't remember them well enough. I'm a big believer in not creating details that I don't remember, not creating dialogue. So anything that I put in quotation marks in my book and my memoir is something that I actually remember. I might not remember it correctly, but that's how I remember it. So I don't make up any of that stuff. And these two stories from my life, I couldn't remember well enough. I could remember sort of the outcome of what happened in generally, but I couldn't remember any of the dialogue. And so they ended up being short stories, and they ended up taking a life of their own. The characters became different. The endings were different. But those two stories were definitely from my own life.
Do you sit down right after you've had one of these experiences that you might want to write about and write yourself a memo? Like right after you met with President Trump, do you write down what was really said? I'm just kidding. That's terrible of me. Okay. All right. She has no comment.
Oh, I didn't know if it was a real question. I do take a lot of notes.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you storyboard?
I don't storyboard at all.
It's all very free form.
It is. Uh-huh. I just sort of see what happens in a story. I usually have an idea about a situation, and that's all I know. And then I just let the characters go and see how they don't manage it well, or they manage it well. Oftentimes they don't.
All right. Well, you're here right now in our studio recording this interview about your memoir, which just came out. We call this publicity. We call this a book tour, right?
I suppose so. You had me sign my first book.
This is the first book you've signed?
It is absolutely the first book I signed.
Well, that's pretty cool. It doesn't say that, though. It doesn't say book number one. I'm just kidding. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. We're having fun here on the program. It's always great to have a guest who actually comes into the studio. And my guest today is Shuley Caywood, and her memoir is The Going and Goodbye. And she grew up here in Yellow Springs. But you think about Yellow Springs a lot, don't you?
I think about Yellow Springs a lot. I have a longing for it that I can't describe. It's an ache to come home. And so I come home. When I come home for about a week at a time, and I try to come home at least four times a year, if not five. And I just try to soak it in when I'm here. I miss this place a lot, but I feel like my husband is my true home wherever he is. So we're in Johnson City till he retires, and that's okay with me.
In the book, you talk about the house where you grew up. To tell us about the house. It sounds like a pretty neat house.
It is a neat house. It is a barn that someone before we bought it converted into a home. So it sits behind another house on the street. It isn't on the street. It's in an alley, which is kind of funny. I live in an alley. And my parents have done a lot to it over the years, but my mother always tells a story that my father wanted to live in a barn. And we were living in Dayton, Ohio. And his boss, who lived in Yellow Springs, his name was Tom Teepin. And
he just passed away.
He did just pass away. Mm-hmm. And he heard of this barn for sale in Yellow Springs and told my father about it. And my mother thought, what's the chance that someone found a barn? But there my mom and my dad came to Yellow Springs to see it. And my dad walked into it. He looked around for a minute and then said, we'll take it. And he didn't, my poor mother, he did not ask her whether they would take it. He just said he wanted it. Fortunately, they both love the home. It's very quirky. If you go upstairs, you can still see, you know, the structure of the barn. It's still there. It's just it's an odd but magical house. I love it.
Well, it must have been built a really long time ago when that was maybe still countryside out behind it in Yellow Springs? I mean, why would they have a barn in town like that?
I'm not sure why. I do know that the house in front of ours, you know, it's a joint property. It's all in one property, that they had a barn, and people remember playing music in that barn before it was a house. I'm not sure why. My parents might know, but I don't know why they had a barn in town. And I don't think it was country when it was built, actually. I feel like it was built maybe in the 60s. I know it got converted a few years before we moved into it. We moved into it in 1973.
Well, it's not as old as I thought then, but sounds neat. I don't know which building that is. I'm going to have to go check it out sometime. Of course, you say it's not really on the street.
It is not on the street.
Okay. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about your book.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
The book is The Going and Goodbye. It's a memoir, and it was written by Shuli Sochetel Kaywood, who's been my guest on the program today, and I've been trying to get that middle name in there a little bit because it's Aztec. And what does it mean?
It's the Princess of the Flowers. I always say I think my parents had high hopes for me.
It's a beautiful name.
Well, thank you.
For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening.